Here today to present our article for the Finance Committee's cut bill, I guess we'd call it, the first bill of the session. And for me, it's always a very, the bill's being passed out right now and the spreadsheets are being passed out, so you'll have them in a minute. To me, it's a very painful process to have to cut higher education. I don't believe we should be cutting higher education. I believe we should be putting more investments in for students, because we all know that having a well-educated workforce, having a strong research university is very important to the economic future of our state. The article I'm presenting today is a draft, and we will not take action on the bill today, Madam Chair, we'll tell you that. I'm not requesting action on the bill today. I would like the bill to come back on Thursday so that if there is any changes that we do want to make in the bill, after you have a look at it, after members of the public have a look at it, we can still make those changes, perhaps. I have some goals with my recommendation here today, and these are in really no order of importance, but there's some kind of principles. We like principles in the Pension Commission, don't we, Senator Lynch, by which can kind of guide decision-making. And they're not always principles of my choice, but here they are. First of all, we need to maintain our maintenance of effort in the agreement we made with as being the recipient of federal recovery dollars. That means that we can't really cut the MinSQ system or the University of Minnesota below the 2006 level. So you'll see we did go down to the 2006 level. You'll see that on the spreadsheet and in the draft. Second, the Office of Higher Education recommended, and I agree, that we fulfill this year's state grant commitment so that students who had counted on getting a state grant of a certain size will get that this year. It does exacerbate our problem for next year, however, because we do have a deficit in the state grant, and we don't have money to fill the deficit. Three, I think it's important that we, and we need to legally, fulfill contractual requirements. So we have this issue with North Dakota, which just came up recently, and I don't know that Senator Roebling knows this, and I've mentioned it to a few other members, where in our reciprocity agreement with North Dakota, it ends up that we owe them an additional $1.8 million. And so that really made this recommendation very difficult because of having to come up with that additional $1.8 million. Also, because we belong to this compact, the Midwest Higher Education Compact, I did not agree with the governor that we should cut the dues. I thought we needed to maintain the dues. And I'm going to, if you all don't remember what they do, I am going to have them come in later this session and talk about both what they're doing with their Lumina grant, with the credit bank, educational credit bank, and also the other ways in which they save us money.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Senator Cory.
Senator Pappas, how much are the dues?
$95,000.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Number four, I'm really recommending that we support the underserved students that now are starting to come to college in larger numbers. So you'll see that in my recommendation for what we do with the state grant rationing, that we do, if we do run short of the state grant, and there's a rationing system, that we do protect those lower income students. And the approach we're taking to achieve, you may recall that all the achieve money was spent in the first year. We only have $1.2 million for the second year, and that is being aimed at those low-income students. And I'm recommending that we protect the Summer Bridge Program, although it is costing less than was projected, so we're able to pick up some savings there. Number five, I think we should spread the cuts fairly, and mostly the cuts are at the 3% level recommended by the governor. The exceptions are I'm recommending zero for the very, very small programs, that it doesn't really matter that much if we pick up a couple thousand dollars to us, but it matters a lot to those small programs. And with the work study, I am recommending the governor's proposal, which is to take the new money that we put in last year, which is $2.5 million. And it pains me to do that, but there's no place else, especially with this North Dakota deal. No place else to go for that money. 6, I'm recommending that we avoid micromanaging how the systems handle the cuts. So you'll see language in there that does give them flexibility. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't have them be accountable to us and ask them how they spend the money. But I don't think that we're in a position up here to be figuring out how they should do that. That's why we have the regents. That's why we have the Board of Trustees. And finally, I'm following the recommendation of the Office of Higher Education to raise fees in their regulatory process for the private colleges and the for-profit colleges to cover the cost of the service. So that's it. With that, I'll just have you turn to the bill, and then I'll have Dr. Weidman do the spreadsheet, and I may have Mr. Michikanis talk about some parts of the bill that are from the Office of Higher Education. If you turn to 219, this is the total appropriation for, well, these are the appropriation sections in general, starting on page 2. And you can see the reduction of the Summer Bridge Program on 2.24 and 2.25. That's $1.4 million. They, in conversations with the Office of Higher Education, we had $2.4 million for that program this year. And they had approved, I think, 7 schools who are going to offer the Summer Bridge Program. And it only came to $1 million. So that includes Central Lakes Community College, Itasca Community College, Rochester Community and Technical College, Minneapolis Community and Technical College, North Hennepin Community College, Mankato State University, and the University of Minnesota Crookston. There are 7. So those are the 7 that are going to be offering the Summer Bridge Program to underserved students. Maybe actually, because we have all the numbers on the spreadsheet, why don't I just go to the language? And I think it'll be easier to understand the numbers if we look at the spreadsheet. The language starts on Section 6. And, Mark, why don't you explain Section 6? It's the self program.
Madam Chair, members.
Would you introduce yourself, please,
record,
Mark?
I'm Mark Mishkans with the Office of Higher Education. Section 6 has to do with the self-loan program. And what's being proposed here is essentially, you see a lot of language stricken and some new entries, but fundamentally it's an increase in the annual maximum amounts for students to borrow under the self-loan program from the office. A lot of the struck language is simply obsolete language that refers to earlier years. But essentially, we're raising the maximum for the grade level is up to $7,500. From the current $6,000 in the first year. And then on page 4, you can see in following grades, those amounts would increase. Very important on lines 4.33, this is only for students in bachelor degrees or graduate school. This would not apply to students in two-year programs. And this is done for a couple of reasons. One is, frankly, as we look at what we consider to be market share for the program, this is where it's falling off. Other programs are picking up student loans in four-year programs for a variety of reasons. The second reason is actually a bit more important. In our bond covenants with the banks that either give us letters of credit or give us bank insurance on the bonds, they require a certain percentage of our loans to be from four-year programs. So to the extent that we increase these caps, we don't want to run into those kinds of issues with our bond covenants.
Section 7 is also part of that.
Yes, Madam Chair, that and what that does is increases the total caps for students when they're repaying. Or actually, the language on page 6 at the top. I'm trying to remember what this was.
This is a repayment period.
Perhaps, Madam Chair, on this, I'll ask Ms. Kozier to come up and speak to this. She's the manager of the program.
Welcome to the committee. Would you introduce yourself for the record?
Carolyn Kozier, manager of the self-loan program.
Thank you.
Page six.
Could you spell that for me?
K-O-S as in Sam, I-R.
Kozer. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, on page six, the repayment terms, because we are increasing the loan limits, we are also extending the repayment terms. For students who have borrowed over $40,000, they would now have a repayment period not exceeding 20 years. Under the current rules, the maximum time period is up to 15 years.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Then in section eight, this is the HEFA language, which extends the limit on the bonds for the Higher Education Finance Authority. We had this bill before us the other day, and we sent it out as a separate bill. I'm trying to remember who the author of this is. Is somebody in this room the author? Oh, I'm the author.
Somebody in this room. Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Okay. section 9.
Do you want to have one of your other Rodler come?
Section 9 is also a request from the Office of Higher Education to raise various fees in the program, and I'm going to ask Mr. Rodler to explain this.
Madam Chair, members, George Rodler. I'm the manager of the institutional registration and licensing at the Office of Higher Education. Section 9 is related to the registration process for the degree-granting institutions, and the increase for current schools is approximately 25%, goes from $950 to $1,200 for renewals. The initial registration for new schools, either coming in from out of state that are already in existence or startup schools, are substantially higher than they are right now, and they would depend upon how many degrees or non-degree programs a school decided to offer, but it would be substantially more to come into the state.
So you said there were about 25% increase?
Yes, it goes from the renewals for current schools goes from $950 annually to $1,200 annually. And Section 10 is for the additional fees to after a school has opened and wants to add degrees or non-degrees programs that have to be reviewed and looked at before they can be approved. We've also increased in the next section, 7.21, some of the consulting fees and review fees when we have to obtain an outside consultant to look at programs or degrees where we are unable within the office to look at them because of special areas.
And is this on Section 13? Is
Senator Pappas?
I'm asking George.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Why don't you go explain that too?
Okay, Section 13, those are the fees for what non-degree granting schools, schools that do not offer any degrees. They have certificates or diplomas, but no degrees. And the fees there, again, for new schools are going to increase similar to the increases for the degree-granting schools. There'll be substantially more and will depend, again, on how many non-degree programs these schools want to offer. So that if they come in with multiple non-degree programs to offer, they will pay a higher initial licensing fee than a school that comes in with one non-degree program. The renewal fees for the existing schools will go. Right now there's varying fees ranging from $430 to $1,150 for schools, depending upon how many programs they're offering and whether or not they're accredited. And The renewal, as proposed, will be to $1,150 for everybody, with additional fees for schools offering more than one program up to a maximum of $2,000 if they offer enough programs. We also have a provision for, we have some schools that are licensed by other state agencies but are required to obtain a license from our office because they use college, university, academy, or institute in their name. And in addition, there is a proposal in the self-loan area where schools that participate in self-loan or state grant will also now have to be licensed by our office or registered. And there's a special fee for those two categories of schools, and that would be a $750 fee because those schools are exempt from some of the provisions of 141, and they're already licensed by other state agencies. And again,
Mr. Rober, would you give me an example of what we're talking about here?
The other schools?
Yes.
Madam Chair, members, primarily it will be a number of cosmetology schools that under the proposed language changes for state grant and self-loan will continue to be eligible for state grant without becoming accredited or participating in Pell. And those schools are obviously licensed by the cosmetology board or the barber board, and they would have a license from our office in order to participate in the state financial aid programs. And that,
thank you
for that.
That's clear.
And then we've also, again, in this section, modified some of the consulting fees and modification fees that previously existed.
And the student transcript fee?
Right, and there was an increase in the multiple location fees that they pay, and also in the transcript fee from $10 to $15, which I don't think has been changed for many years. And we've also asked to increase the cost of public office copies to 50 cents a page.
Thank you. Does that conclude your report, Mr. Roper?
That concludes my report.
Thank you. Senator Pappas?
Okay, Madam Chair, I wanted to have the members go back to Section 12 on page 7, which is giving the MNSQ board greater authority to issue revenue bonds from $200 million to $300 million. And if there are any questions on that, I think that also might be a separate bill. We could ask if there's someone here.
Are there any questions?
I know MNSQ is tied up in the House, so I'm not sure if there's anyone here in the audience right now. But. Okay, Judy.
Is there anybody who would like to speak?
Right. Is that pretty much what you're doing? Okay. Unless anyone has any questions.
There are no questions. Continue.
All right. Then let's jump to any other language. There's some transfer language on page 10 and 11, the Office of Higher Education. Why don't you explain that on page
11? Yeah. Mr. Canis?
Chair, members, on section 14 at the top there, this is actually part of the process that we engaged in during the fall, the winter, to try to address the issue with the ACHIEVE program. We essentially transferred money between 2 years for the state grant program and from the grant program to the ACHIEVE program. Of the amount of $4.3 million. So we essentially have transferred money from the ACHIEVE program, from the grant program to the ACHIEVE program. And this simply replaces that money in the second year. The idea always was to transfer money back from ACHIEVE to the state grant program to make it the state grant program whole. It was simply a cash issue. We never wanted to borrow money from the grant program to fix the ACHIEVE problem. So by transferring language for the money from the ACHIEVE program back to the state grant, we make the grant program whole.
So, section 16 is also a transfer issue.
In section 16, this was money in last year's bill for grants to students at technical colleges for emergency purposes.
Oh, no, Mark.
I'm sorry.
This is the scholarship. This is the get-ready stuff.
Would you define again where you're having us? We're on page 10, line 10, 2, 3, is that where you are?
I can say, yeah, we're on page 10, and I can just say in section 15, this is just to clarify that this, in last year's bill for emergency grants, was just a one-time appropriation. That language was left out of last year's bill. So that was the intent, and so we're just adding that.
Okay.
Then section 16 is also a request from the Office of Higher Education.
Madam Chair, members, that
Jimmy Shikanis.
Page 10, and then on top of page 11 is actually the new language. We have the authority under current law to transfer money between programs to the extent that it makes sense to manage those programs. The Get Ready program is not part of the list that we can transfer to. We are required under federal law, the grant we get from the federal government of $2.5 million annually, to match those resources on a one-to-one basis. And we essentially match over many different programs. And we're concerned that, given the dynamics of the budget, that some of those programs won't be able to meet that match. And to the extent that we can transfer money, should it be even a short amount, from one of the other programs in our budget to get ready, to order to make that match, we would like that authority.
And then we have one more section on page 13,
Senator
section
Pappas.
19, Madam Chair, that is also a transfer carry forward type issue that the office is requesting.
Again, Madam Chair and members, the way that this deals with work study and the child care programs. The way these programs work is money is allocated to the institutions, and they allocate it out to students based on parameters that are in law. When institutions don't need the money, they refund it back to us, and then we resend it out to institutions. And since December, January, we've been getting money back from institutions for these purposes. And we are, of course, aware of the budget problem, and we thought since these refunded resources have not been promised to anybody, and we knew that these programs would likely be cut in fiscal 11, if we could carry that money forward to mitigate those reductions. Otherwise, we are required under the current law to reallocate the money. So it simply takes these refunds. It may amount to, over the course of the next few months, maybe $500,000 total between the two programs. So it simply helped to mitigate cuts next year.
And we are cutting work study next year, proposing to cut that. So that could help mitigate that cut next year.
Senator Pappas.
Then I think the office, section 20, I think Mark started to explain to you how maybe you want to talk about what happened with the University of Minnesota. I'm not sure. Did you talk about that before with this with the committee or just with us privately?
I'm not sure.
Mr. Michiganis?
I think we made, Madam Chair, some kind of presentation about
the Achieve
program.
People remember that
Senator Pappas?
All the Achieve money has been spent in the first year. And in fact, it was so we took money from the second year to pay for the Achieve program. So that money really is gone. For next year, the proposal is to take the Leap and Sleep money, which is about $1.2 million, to pay for a scaled-down Achieve program. And the office had a recommendation, which was to use a type of rationing system. But I felt it would be better if we could just let students know how much they're going to get. So, and again, it is driving the dollars down to the low-income students since there's so few dollars left here. And the award would be a flat $1,200. And all the other requirements are still there. You still have to have a 2.5 and a 2 years of a language. And you have to get your application in by on line 14-9 by August 31st. So if there is still more money requested or more students who are eligible on that date, then they have the authority to ration the grant below that. So maybe it'll go down to $1,100 per student. But I felt it was better to have a little bit more certainty to the size of that grant for students than to leave them out there thinking they're going to have a higher grant. And this way, the money will be spread over a broader number of students if it's $1,200 as opposed to the $4,000 limit we had last year.
Senator Pampas, is this the issue where the private colleges and the university were part of a pilot to use e-applications, and because they were received a significantly higher amount of that money that overspent that account? Is this,
it was
if that's the case, yeah. Is that issue, Is that process still in place for this period of time?
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, the pilot project was just with the University of Minnesota. None of the other private colleges were involved in that. It was kind of electronic filing, if you will, of an application. Given the amount of money that's available and given this language, we do not intend to do that for fiscal 11.
Thank you. Senator Pappas.
And then Section 21 is the state grant rationing. This is a little bit of a modification of what the office had suggested. They suggested adding a surcharge to the applicant's assigned family responsibility and student responsibility, and I'm just recommending that the surcharge be to on the assigned family responsibility. Did I explain that right? And then the repealers. Do you know what the repealers are? Or Ms. Weidman can explain. It's just the self-loan. Okay, it's the repealers have to do with the self-loan and the private school registration reworking that we did.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Are there any questions? Senator Coring.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pappas, I guess the question that I have is if members, we're not going to vote on this today, you said, so if we take it and look at it and we see something that a particular member is not happy with, can we offer amendments on Thursday?
Sure.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Coring.
And then the governor's.
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, you might want to talk to me about it. Maybe we could fix that ahead of time.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, another question.
Yes, Senator Coring.
The governor's budget, his reduction was $47 million because he couldn't go any lower because of the stimulus. So I couldn't see what your number was at. Are you at that same number?
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair and Senator Coring, the governor was actually at $53
million. Oh, 53, okay.
Because he also cut other programs that is administered by the Office of Higher Education. Mm-hmm. The $46 million was just for MNSCU and the U. And I did the same cut. Why don't we let Maya Wedden go over the spreadsheet? And then we'll see where the numbers are at. And she can talk about what the governor did and what this draft is proposing.
Okay. Dr. Weidman?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Maya Weidman, Senate Fiscal Analysis and Research. I think probably the best thing is to look at the third column over, which shows you the difference between the governor and the November forecast. And then if we go to the second column over from the right, that'll show the cuts that the Senate did. If we go down the Office of Higher Education, if we go down to line 11, both the governor and the Senate are proposing an administrative cut of $141,000 to the Office of Higher Education. If we go down into the next section, that's in like lines 15 through 22, you'll see the governor makes some small cuts to student and parent information, get ready outreach, and to the Minnesota Minority Partnership, and the Senate does not make any of those cuts. Starting on line 26 through 37 are the various state grant changes. The governor, if you look on line 29, the governor does a base reduction of the state grant program of 2.7. Then if we go down to line 31.
Where is that 2.7?
I don't have 2.7 either.
Six.
On line 29?
Line 29.
I'm sorry. In line 29, the governor does a base reduction of the state grant program of
2.296.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Weidman.
Then if we continue on down to line 31, that is the money for the Summer Bridge Program. The governor cuts the money for both appropriations. If you go across, you'll see that because we had to find money to pay for that tuition reciprocity, we took $1.4 million out of the first year to help address that problem because it's a large amount and there really wasn't any place else to go for it.
Ms. Weidman, when the governor's budget came out, we were not aware of this additional amount of money.
We just found out maybe like not even a week ago.
Thank you.
The governor also, if you remember last year or last session, we added that ninth semester of eligibility for the state grant. The governor takes that out, $4 million. The Senate proposes to leave that in. And lines 33 through 35 basically address the issue of if there is, and this is in statute, that if there is an insufficient appropriation in the state grant program, it proposes a rationing scheme where you increase the student responsibility, which is currently at 46%, so you'd go up to 47 or 48 or whatever. And then you also would put a surcharge on the family responsibility. So if you look on that line there, you'll see there's about $35 million. And what the governor proposes to do is it also says in statute that those reductions have to be split equally between what you do to the student responsibility side of the equation and the family responsibility side of the equation. So whatever deficit is still there in the state grant program, the governor is proposing to divide that up equally between the assigned student responsibility and the assigned family responsibility. Then if you look at...
And why isn't there anything under the Senate?
That's on line 35.
Okay, you're coming to that.
Yep.
Sorry.
On line 35 is the Senate's proposal. And what the Senate is proposing to do is to have the full rationing take place on the family responsibility side, because what that will do is it'll push money down to the lower income families. And there was as Senator Pappas said, that was one of her guidelines in making decisions on what we needed to do. Then if you go down starting on like lines 38 through the bottom of the page, you'll see there on line 39, the child care money, the governor reduces that by $500,000. The Senate makes no reductions there. We both the governor and Senate, reduce the work study by $2.5 million. Both the governor and Senate reduce the Indian scholarships by $120,000.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Members, I really didn't want to reduce the Indian scholarships. I was just at the Chippewa dinner, and that program is very heavily prescribed. They have a long waiting list. But, you know, I couldn't find that $120,000. I'd love to increase it because of, you know, of all the groups we need to get going to college, it's our Native Americans in our community. And so it makes me very sad to recommend that.
Ms. Weidman?
Madam Chair, then on line 44, you see that both the Senate and the governor cut the emergency grants that went to the two-year schools, $150,000.
Ms. Weidman, would you remind me of what the emergency grants were about, what cutting that is going to actually have in terms of impact?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that was a House provision that was part of when we went to conference committee that we accepted as part of the compromise, and it basically had a small amount of money that two-year schools could use for if there was some emergency that came up with a student. Like, I think the things that they talked about was like a student's car breaks down, or it gave them a little bit of money that they could use to help out a student in emergency situations.
Sort of like special cash assistance.
Right.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we move on, I'd just like to kind of review the surcharge and that it's going on to the family responsibility. So does anyone have an estimate as to what level of family income will be eligible for a state grant?
Mr. Michikanis has done some runs on that. She might want to address those specifics.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, I think that the easy answer is about $25,000 of adjusted gross income. Anything above that?
No, for the state grant.
For the state grant. Anything above that would reach the surcharge. Anything below that is roughly a zero EFC. It would not have any kind of a surcharge.
I think the
Senator Pappas?
I think that, Senator Roebling, I think your question is how high an income people will have to will have before they are no longer eligible for a state grant. Is that what you're thinking? So I don't know that number exactly, but I think right now it's maybe in the 70s or 80s, and it'll come down to more the 60s, 60,000 maybe. Is that right? Depending on family circumstances and how many kids you have in college. So we'll bring that top down. Those were the people who were probably getting $100, $200, something like that, so they'll drop off.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Roblin.
Senator Pappasen, do you expect that then the ones in the 60s will be getting the $100 and it'll just proportionately go down that way?
Senator Pappas.
Yes. Yes, and this is just a one-year solution. I'm not recommending we change any of the broader parameters of the state grant because we worked very hard to do that. So after next year, that's just for next year. Then it bounces back to the usual LME, family responsibility, all those things that we put in place.
Any other questions?
Ms. Weidman is on page 2.
Okay, if we go on to page 2.
Ms. Weidman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the ICAP program is the Intervention for College Attendance program that we've talked about over several years. The governor reduces that program by $65,000. The Senate does not make any reductions in that program. The governor reduces, this was the Midwest Higher Ed Compact that Senator Pappas referenced. He reduces their appropriation by $6,000. The Senate does not reduce that appropriation. The governor reduces United Family Practice, and the Senate reduces that appropriation at the same level as the governor. Then on the interstate tuition reciprocity, that's where you'll see the governor actually had proposed reducing that program. And if you'll see on under the Senate program, the 1.751, that's basically is the amount that we're going to need to pay that obligation. So basically, we had to come up with that money to pay for it and take it from other places. The Minnesota College Savings Program on line 55, the governor and the Senate are the same, and also Minitex and MinLink. There were no changes to Mayo, and with MinSCU, basically, to get back to that 2006 level, there's a reduction of $10,467,000. And that's on line 75 and 77. And then if we go to page 3, on lines 101 and 104, you'll see the reductions with both the governor and the Senate being at a reduction of $36,120,000. So overall, if you look, the bottom line, the governor in 10 and 11 is reducing the appropriations by about $53 million, and the Senate is at 49.751, and that was actually, I think we started out at 48, and then we had to pay for the tuition reciprocity, so that increased our reduction.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Weidman. Senator Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if we could go to the reciprocity again. That's line 54. And I remember being a little puzzled by this when the governor's proposal first came out. Was the suggestion that we just no longer offer reciprocity with North Dakota, or how was it that the governor was seeking to secure those savings there?
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch.
Mr. Giannis.
What happened was when the governor's budget was being constructed, we felt that we had extra money in that appropriation. The current appropriation is $2.75 million a year, and the recommendation was to take $165,000 out. Just recently, in fact, within the last 2 weeks, we've learned from North Dakota, and the process of paying North Dakota is actually fairly complicated. It has to do with how students flow between the two states, what the two states spend on instructional costs, what the students pay for tuition. So it gets a bit complicated, but at the end of the day, we figure out what the net number is, and if we owe them more, we pay them, and if they owe us more, they pay us. And typically, we just owe them more money because of the student flows and the like. Apparently, one of the North Dakota states had misreported one of their spending numbers, roughly about $1.2 million. They had underreported it, so they were spending more money than they told us initially. So that leads to new estimates about what the flow has to be. And instead of having a little bit extra money, it turns out that our financial obligation is about a little bit more than $1.4 million higher the first year and about $265,000 higher in fiscal 11. So it has nothing to do with the program itself, the flow and the payments. It's just what you need to make the financial obligation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I think our students in northwestern Minnesota really do rely on North Dakota State University. It's an engineering school, and they don't have access to that. I know that Senator Tomasoni is trying to provide some access a little farther to the east, but this is they can live at home and commute and go to North Dakota State University. I'm not sure. I think they have. Do they have a veterinarian school up there too, or is it mostly the engineering?
Actually, I think the veterinary services are provided by the University of Minnesota, but it is the engineering program that draws a number of Minnesota students.
Interesting.
And that's good, because they'll probably get jobs in Minnesota afterwards.
Any other questions?
Okay, Madam Chair, I think we have some people who want to testify.
Yes, we do. We have some students here, Jennifer Wheel, Tyler Smith, and Judy Borgen. Would you please come?
Judy Borgen is not a student.
Judy's not a student.
Maybe she's lifelong learner.
Aren't we all? So it'll be Jennifer Wheel and Tyler Smith.
Get to sit with me.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jennifer Weil, and I serve as the State Chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. I'm also a current student at MSUM Moorhead. I'm a graduate student there. And I guess I will start. So, Madam Chair and members, thank you so much for the opportunity to come and testify to you today. We really appreciate the committee trying to preserve the funding for the state colleges and universities and mitigate the cuts to the state grant program. At a time of massive enrollment increases, when people are entering higher education for the first time or trying to stay in higher education or re-enter higher education again after being laid off, we would support the committee's recommendation for the $10.4 million cuts to the system as recommended by the governor and mandated under the federal maintenance of effort requirements. Next year's cuts are relatively small in comparison to the cuts that will happen and have deep consequences for many across the state, and we recognize and appreciate the situation. The future is bleak at best, and without federal stimulus money, the state will face the largest deficit in its history. In 2003, the last time the state had a major fiscal crisis, we suffered almost $200 million in cuts to the system, which led to astronomical tuition increases that rival that in the healthcare premiums. If ongoing cuts are enacted, state support for our colleges and universities will fall to almost 2001 state funding levels. So merely after 9 years, we'll be starting over, basically starting from where we were 9 years ago, and we'll have almost 40,000 more students in our system. Under any foreseeable budget solution, students will, again, to be asked to pay more and receive less for their higher education. It's very difficult to explain this to our tens of thousands of students. Tomorrow, many of the State University students will be at the Capitol talking to you and to fellow legislators about how the cuts are affecting them personally on the campuses. We know that the members of this committee have been champions for students over the years, and many of you have acted heroically to help students across the state. We need to continue to work closely over the next couple of years and try to work towards solutions that will hopefully help preserve our institutions and preserve the academic quality and the services that the students have come to rely on and expect. Please feel free to use MSUSA as a resource to help you connect with real students that are dealing personally with a lot of these cuts that are happening at their campuses. And please come to us. We're more than willing to work with you to help find solutions during this difficult budgetary time.
Thank you, Ms. Wheel, and thanks for coming and presenting today. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today. For the record, my name is Tyler Smith. I am the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association. These proposed cuts to the MSU budget pose a troubling trend that raises great concerns for students across the state. And while we understand the significant budget challenges facing the governor and the legislature, continued reductions to the MSU system budget will have significant effects on communities, campuses, and students. Minnesota's public, community, and technical colleges are the anchor of regional and local economies in every corner of the state. And tough economic times have meant drastic increases in enrollment for almost every two-year institution. In fact, Pine Technical College saw a fall enrollment increase of 19.6% in headcount, and many other community and technical and consolidated colleges have seen double-digit increases in students coming through their doors in need of training and services. While we are excited to see many more Minnesotans entering college to be retrained, improve their current skill set, or pursue education in a new career field, these increases in enrollment create real challenges for campuses. When combined with dwindling state support, campuses are being asked to do more with even less. That means vital student services such as financial aid assistance, academic and transfer advising, as well as shrinking class offerings, are leaving many students with no place to turn. While the new $10.4 million cut proposed is lower than originally expected, students all over Minnesota are worried about the impact that slumping public support for higher education will have on the state's ability to respond to the ever-changing economy. Businesses all over Minnesota are reshaping how they operate, and to do that, they will need well-trained workers who can meet the needs for the future. MSU institutions, specifically our community and technical colleges, continue to meet these challenges head-on with significantly fewer resources. Simply put, institutions now will have to figure out how to provide a 2010 quality education with 2006 funding levels. Not only that, but our colleges must do all this with record numbers of students coming through the door needing classes and services. Even more troubling is that students at MSU's community and technical colleges are already paying the second highest tuition and fees in the nation. With further state deficits on the horizon, it is likely that tuition increases will continue to drive up the cost for students. There are many areas in which Minnesota should seek to be first in the nation, but college tuition rates should not be one of them. Madam Chair and members, students understand the unique financial challenges facing the state at this moment in time. The challenges this committee and all elected officials face are significant, but we believe that a stronger MSU system can help Minnesota emerge from this crisis stronger and ready to prosper well into the future. Thank you again for allowing me to testify to you today, and I would be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I have a question, and I don't know that we've ever asked the students this, but you know, when we're looking at bonding proposals, and I know the lists are long from each of the various institutions. The way it shakes down is that we pay two-thirds and the university systems have to pick up a third. And I'm just wondering, have your organizations considered that assumed debt and the costs of that in the future and how that might impact future tuition rates, even as far as not only paying for them, but then maintaining those facilities once they're completed. I don't know if you have any input when those bonding requests are being considered, but that bill is still kind of open for consideration. And I know that there's a lot of university projects on there. And I like to, you know, build things at the universities, but I also recognize that it puts a burden on the students through that one-third share. So I'm just wondering if you have any comments about that.
Mr. Smith?
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, one of the things you mentioned was maintaining those buildings after they're built, and that's something that we really focus on. Part of the bonding bill is HEPR funds, and when those are passed, those don't put a significant burden on students. And so we definitely encourage the senators here and the representatives on the other side to keep that in mind when we're dealing with the bonding bill, that yes, there is definitely a maintenance cost to these buildings. And that's why we encourage more funding for HEPR, because then we're able to see those buildings function for longer and we're able to get more use out of them.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
When we do HEPR, there is no one-third, is there?
No.
It's just for the complete overhauls of buildings and new buildings. So that would be your preference then, probably in a year like this.
Yes, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Senator Papps.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, as a member of the bonding committee, I argued for HEPRA. And Senator Lanxess is good in HEPRA, but not 100%. I mean, we had 100, I think they both requested 100 million. And I think I think the conference committee came up with maybe 65 mm-hmm. for, I'm not sure, it was around 50 to 65 in that range for both of them. But that's the first place they go to for money, because it's not a named project or a named building. But it really goes over all, it services the whole system. So everybody gets a little piece of that to help on their campus.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to each of the student reps for their excellent testimony. Is there anything that you would reallocate in the recommendations, given the fact that there is going to be a cut?
Ms. Wheel, would you like to respond? You don't.
No, Madam Chair, Senator Wieger. Really, I mean, I think we respect the what has been proposed, and I think the only thing that we were having discussions about was, as far as the state grant, that we would like to see an increase as well in the percentage of student amount that is supposed to be. In the grant formula, it's a little confusing, but basically, if you increase the family contribution and also the student share, it does help some of the students that that don't necessarily attend a higher cost institution, but it helps them to basically receive that grant.
Okay. Mr. Smith, did you want to speak to that?
No, I think I'll hold my comments at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize, because this was actually kind of a follow-up, I think, to Senator Roebling's comment, because clearly HEPRA is really important. But as I was listening to your testimony and talking about how important the well-prepared workforce is, I think also the other bonding projects, we've been trying really hard to be working with MNSCU and the U on only doing projects that are either going to renovate buildings that are really pretty much falling apart, upgrading things so that you guys can get the right skills, or new buildings that are going to help us with particular science and engineering and math. And I don't know if you haven't want to speak to any of that, because I know that we've gotten a chance to work with your associations on those projects as well.
Ms. Wheel?
Madam Chair and Senator Clark. Yes, we do definitely appreciate your support when it comes to the bonding projects and helping our students. You know, obviously providing them with a good environment to be able to be educated is very important. And also, I think that it offers a great opportunity to the community for putting people back to work to help, in the local communities to help with those renovations. So overall, we absolutely do support those bonding projects and think that it's a benefit not only to the students but the community.
Thank you. Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair and Senator Clark, we do feel the same way in our state colleges. And the reason I mention HEPR so strongly is because it allows us to maintain those buildings that we already have so that we can use them for longer. It just seems to be a cost efficiency thing. But certainly just all the bonding projects, we as an association certainly support the MNSCU list as it stands. because in any way that it passes, it still aids students and it still builds stronger communities.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your time today and your testimony. Now, our other student, Judy Borgen, is she here to present?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judy Borgen with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. And it has been a few years since I have been a student. but thank you for thinking of me as that. I just want to say thank you to the committee. Certainly any cut that our system has to absorb is not something that we welcome, but we do understand the fiscal fiscal situation of the state, and we are certainly working with our institutions in our office to make the necessary cuts so that we bring our budget in balance and get it structurally balanced by the end of fiscal 11. We do appreciate the action of this committee and its bill to incorporate back into a single line item our appropriation. We appreciate the giving our Board of Trustees and the leadership of the system the ability to make the decision on how those cuts will be apportioned between the system office and our campuses. And we also appreciate, if we understand it properly, that the base going forward into fiscal 12 and 13 is a little bit higher than the governor's base, and so we appreciate that as we head out into the next biennium. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Borgen. Are there any questions? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Borgen, are there any fund balances anywhere left in Minsku that you'll be able to use to soften the cuts a little?
We certainly are Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, certainly our institutions have some balances remaining. It is something that they have been really required by our board to maintain a reserve of some amount. We need to do that because we need to be sure that we have a structural balance going forward, and that as we look at accreditation and the Higher Learning Commission coming on and looking at the viability of our institutions, it is important that we have some funds that are available in case of unforeseen things like enrollment, suddenly a drop in enrollment or something like that, where we need to have some transition funds to get down to a lower base. So there are some funds available, but basically those are mostly at the institution level. We do have a system-wide reserve that still remains at 1% of our appropriation.
Other questions? Senator Erickson-Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pappas, I just have a general question as we're looking at the budget projections. As I was driving down here today, I was coming back from a family emergency weekend. I was listening to NPR, and they had Roger Moe and Pam Wheelock on, and they were talking about the current deficit and then the deficit we're going to be facing in the future. And Mr. Moe was saying for 12-13, we're going to be looking at a projected deficit of 5.8 without inflation, an additional 1.1 if you add inflation. And they were talking about the necessity of making not only cuts for the short term, but also we really need to be incorporating long-term cuts as well, and not just one-time cuts and getting to our targets. We really need to start thinking about some pretty severe changes and cuts. Is there any of that kind of discussion going on now related to this current year in terms of what we can be doing additionally long term, or movement towards reform and how this is going to play out next year?
Ms. Borgen.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator. Certainly, our institutions have been given planning estimates for 12 and 13. We're kind of running in a range, assuming that some things are solved in this biennium, maybe that some of the solution in the next biennium might be something to do with with revenue enhancements or at least reductions in other areas. But certainly we're planning somewhere in a fairly large reduction in the next biennium, and that's what our institutions are really facing. We have a report that's due to you on March 15th, and in that we're going to be talking, and our institutions will be talking specifically about the kind of planning activities that they have underway for fiscal 12 and 13, kind of give you an idea of what sorts of things that they're putting in place so that in case or expecting that we may have some kind of a further reduction that may be fairly significant and will cause some changes.
So, Senator Erickson-Robes.
Madam Chair, then just to clarify, this budget then just does not reflect too many structural changes. It's just solutions for the current year that we're in.
Ms. Borgen.
Madam Chair, Senator, some of the things that you are seeing now are actions that are being taken that will have the effect of 12 and 13. We're using the ARRA funds that we have, the recovery dollars, to kind of help us do that transition during both fiscals 10 and 11. And so as we move into 12 and 13, we hope we have made some permanent changes that will have that lower base that will help us not have to make so many more drastic changes when we don't have one-time money to help us transition.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Borgen. We have one more person to testify from the University of Minnesota, Mr. Fitzenruder. Richard Fitzenruder? Oh, there you are. We have something to be.
Madam Chair, Senators, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Richard Fitzenrider. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota. I thought we'd take a few minutes just to share with you a couple of slides to put in perspective not only the budget cut that we've taken this next fiscal year that's in the bill before you, but some of the other budget challenges that the university faces in addition to the cut that's in the bill before you and has been recommended by the governor. So as that presentation goes around here quickly, I'll just walk you through this as quick as I can. With that, Madam Chair, I'll jump right in. If you look at slide two, just again to put in perspective what's going on, we entered this biennium, and I'm sure most of you realize this, but the University of Minnesota's base coming into this biennium was approximately $702.6 million. As a result of action taken last session, that budget for the current fiscal year was reduced down to $623.4 million. That was almost a $80 million budget reduction, and the university has made very dramatic budget reductions this current fiscal year. We have initiated an early retirement incentive program. We have laid off employees. We have used the stimulus money to bridge some of those employees to a softer landing at the end of the biennium, but nonetheless, that was a dramatic cut. The base in the legislation was set at $677 million in the second year of the biennium. However, as you recall, the governor unallotted that base by $50 million at the conclusion of the legislative session last spring. So we were looking at, after the governor's unallotment, $627.3 million appropriation, a slight actual increase of about $3.9 million compared to the amount of money we had available in the current fiscal year. And the bill before you, of course, takes that appropriation down to $591.1 million. If you look at the next slide, slide three, driving down to that $591.1 million number is, it is the amount of money that minimum maintenance of effort level for 2006. But in reality, that number is even lower than the amount of appropriation University of Minnesota received in 2001. So this is a very dramatic rollback in all of the gains that you had provided us during this past decade. When we look at the budget problem, if you turn to the next slide, we not only have before us the issue of the budget reduction, the state budget cut for next year, but the university faces other costs. So the budget reduction that's in the bill before you contributes about 25% of the budget challenge that we face next year. We have other expenditure requirements next year. In addition, we have an anomaly that occurs for us once only 11 years, and that's biweekly payroll. Every 11 years in a biweekly payroll system, there's an extra pay period. And that extra pay period, which costs us $41 million alone, hits us next year. So in addition to our normal operating cost increases and our desire to provide our employees with a 2% compensation increase, when you add up those costs, which amount to roughly $100 million, plus the budget cut before us from the bill and from the governor, our challenge is $132 million. We will address that budget problem with 65% of that solution coming by way of budget reductions and the use of some one-time balances in the university. Tuition will solve about 35% of that problem. The tuition rate on average will go up around 7.5%, but as you recall in your bill that you adopted last year, we will buy that tuition increase down for Minnesota resident undergraduates to about 4.5%. We'll buy it down pursuant to the legislation you enacted last session. You will hear on occasion from constituents, I'm sure. The president sent out a letter to the university community yesterday outlining steps, preliminary steps that will be taken to make budget reductions. We will be deferring compensation increases for probably 6 months for our faculty and professional and academic employees as a way to save money. We will be and are discussing furloughs of employees for next fiscal year, and we are also making dramatic and permanent reductions in our operating budgets beyond that in our academic and support units to address this overall budget challenge. If you turn to the next slide, what's occurred during this biennium, and this is a slide that demonstrates the black line, our state appropriation for operations and maintenance in the state specials against tuition revenue. And for the University of Minnesota, for the first time in our collective history, tuition revenue will now exceed state appropriation. And when you look out and be cognizant of the fact that the size of the state budget shortfall in 12 and 13, the pace of the economic recovery in the country and the world, that we don't envision a time in which you're going to be able to bring that state appropriation number ahead of the tuition number, that those lines will diverge more and more into the future. And we're starting seriously to think about what are we going to do and how does that change the way we think about tuition revenue at the university. And if you turn to the next slide, we know that tuition is going to become an ever-increasing part of the university's budget, unless the state, of course, can provide some new resources, and that just looks really kind of grim at this point. And the next slide, 6, shows you that we've been cognizant of that for a while, and in fact, the university's undergraduate students received in the 08-09 time period $78 million in university scholarship support. That was actually $10 million more than the combined federal and state grant total of $68 million. So the university has been putting money into financial aid, and that pace is going to pick up. We've also, since 2005, raised just about $300 million for scholarship endowments. The president has made that a real key priority. If you turn to page 7, you can see an example of what occurred for a student at the University of Minnesota, and in this case in particular, a Minnesota resident undergraduate. Who had a family income from $40,000 to $60,000, we introduced this fiscal year a brand new middle-income scholarship program of $1,500. That student received that scholarship brand new this year. They also received a $783 Pell and State grant increase and a $420 federal stimulus funding increase. So the change in tuition, after it went up 7.5%, the rate went up, that student actually saw nearly a 21% decrease in tuition for this fiscal year. So the university has made significant strides to lower the cost of attendance and lower tuition for students. If I might, Madam Chair, just read you one other thing that's I'd like to just read you an excerpt and tell you from what period this was from. Kind of puts in context what's happening today. And I'll read it quickly. At present, the state shares with the rest of the nation, and the nation shares with the rest of the world in diminished economic activity and income. The situation in Minnesota is serious enough in certain groups and areas to require of any public agency, every wise economy, that does not impair the purposes for which the people instituted it. The university is such an agency, and its purposes, and it proposes to continue, and whenever possible, to intensify its efforts to make savings. This particular set of comments goes on to say, it should be understood these cuts and postponements in services and normal repairs and replacements now being undertaken, however much they may limit the university's usefulness, are considered by the Board of Regents as wise precautions. To go further will raise serious problems that will affect the efficiency of the university and the present and the future of the interests for which the university was established and is maintained. Those are comments, minutes from the Board of Regents in 1932. Gives you a perspective that, I guess that old adage, the more things change, the more they stay the same. We've been here before. The Board of Regents is committed, and the president's committed to do what's necessary to make the cuts. But it is coming to the point at which we do feel that, you know, maybe that old saying, enough is enough. We need to, as the president has said, forge some kind of new covenant with the state of Minnesota to protect what we think is a very important asset of the state, and that's the University of Minnesota, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzenreiter. Are there any questions? Yes, Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Mr. Fitzenreiter, I'd just like to ask the same question that I asked of Minskew about reserve balances that might be available yet to cushion some of the cuts. Are there any left?
Madam Chair, Senators, that's a complicated issue for the University of Minnesota. Unit balances are available. However, you have to be cognizant of the fact that the state of Minnesota just withheld one of our state payments. $54 million was withheld. Those balances that we have are also the cash that operates the university. And that cash, the working capital, like the state has working capital, you're a little short of working capital.
That's right.
But our working capital is pledged against, for liquidity, against variable rate and commercial paper debt that the institution has issued for purposes of financing its capital projects, including our one-third share of debt. So we have to be very careful of maintaining our cash and not expending it, because we have that cash pledged as liquidity against debt. And I have covenants on that debt that the rating agencies require me to report monthly in order to ensure that I have enough coverage in the event that, those variable rate bonds or commercial paper is not remarketed on any given day. So it's complicated. We use it very carefully, but I have to manage it very tightly.
Thank you. Mr. Fitzenreiter, would you like to follow up, Senator Roebling?
No, I have another question, but not related to that one.
I'm looking at the middle-income scholarship support that you've discussed, Mr. Fitzenreiter, and I'm just thinking about this, that you're dedicated, the university's been very dedicated to raising money through scholarships or through fundraising efforts to be able to help students actually have a reduction in their tuition at certain income levels. But I've been wondering if that fundraising and direction of those fundraising dollars towards this then means that it's not available for other expenditures at the university, and that in effect the same thing is beginning to happen here that is in health or in other places, where actually in order to do this there's a shift in the cost of higher education to those who are paying the full fare.
Madam Chair, important thing to understand about the middle income scholarship program, which on an annualized basis is about a $7.8 million expenditure for the university. We carved that $7.8 million out of the operating budget this year, despite the fact that we were reduced by the state some almost $80 million. Those dollars were not fundraised dollars. Those were cut out of budgets. In answer to your question, are we headed to that famous or infamous high tuition, high aid kind of policy? I think the state's been headed that direction for a long time, and I think that pace is accelerating.
Thank you. Senator Roebling.
Thank you. And he answered part of my question is where the dollars were coming from. But I do have to give you credit that this has been a steady progression upward, even while we've been having an economic downturn. And I expect that your endowments are not performing excessively well right now. So is a lot of it, I see you went out and raised $300 million since 2005. Is that where most of it has come from?
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
Yes, foundation money, our own money for the Founders Scholarship Program. We pick up the kids under $40,000, we'll pay they even when we raise tuition, they see no cost increase. We fund that ourselves, not out of scholarships, but again out of the operating budget. With respect to the endowment, the market values of everybody's endowment has dropped. The one saving grace right now is that our payout on that endowment is on a moving quarter, 5-year moving average, so it smooths out so you don't have a dramatic reduction in 1 year to the next when the market value drops. It smooths it over time. But out there as these bad quarters come in those further out years, we'll see some probably flattening, not necessarily decline, in the endowment payout on scholarships.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzenreiter. Our time really is concluded. If there are questions or suggestions to Senator Pappas before next Thursday, we should get those in. And the meeting is adjourned.